I've been told by everybody up on this roof that they're all off the roof. I am on the roof of Exposure 4. Got fire through the roof of the fire building and the entire rear section.
Now, remember, given the main day, has he been accounted for? Okay.
610B, that was the main day. 610B.
I'm here. We got a fire. 1.5-story, single-family dwelling. Fire shown from the second floor. Give me a second alarm on this.
Up to the top floor. I got people hanging out the top floor windows with a baby.
Commercial building. A lot of fire, a lot of smoke. Go ahead and strike a third alarm on my orders on this.
I got people on the front fire escape here with windows vented below them. We need somebody up there.
Yeah, let them know we got a job. I'm pulling up now. Second alarm, I got a 1-story single family frame, heavy fire showing from the attic.
So we're using all here is we got 1-line stretch, fire on the 4th floor, second line being stretched, primary searches are underway.
Welcome back to Old School. I'm Rick Lasky, along with my buddy John Salka. And we want to thank you once again for joining our Old School podcast, where rules do not apply, as we like to say. John, I guess to kind of start things off on a semi-serious note here, buddy, I was just talking with some people down here in Texas this morning, actually, and it's just hard to even wrap my arms around the fact that we're coming up on 20 years since the 9/11. And I know you and I, maybe it snuck up on us because we talk about it so much. You were there. So many friends taken from us and so on. John, it's been 20 years, buddy. 20.
Yep. Time flying right by, you know. It's that thing called life, you know what I'm saying? Like, obviously, 9/11 was a big deal on 9/11, right after 9/11, for the several months, even for the year afterwards when the rescue and recovery. And even as big as it was, and we've talked about this before, somebody said, oh, how do you think the FDNY is going to make out? And I said, we'll be just fine. And we are, and we were, and so is everybody else. And even the biggest, most tragic incidents eventually wane and fade into history. They're not less important. There's no disrespect meant there, but life moves on, and thousands of things have occurred and happened, both good and bad, in America since 9/11. And I, for one, sometimes I think there's a little bit too much, you know, attention and I'm trying to think of an appropriate word, you know, done or talked about or sold, and hats and shoes and stair climbs. And listen, you know what? Sometimes I just think it's a little bit overdone. It was a tragic incident that, you know, we learned a lot from, and that, you know, is never going to go away. On the other hand, you know what? It does go away. It is slowly going away. Just like World War II, to many people, I mean, there's people in America that don't even know what years World War II was, you know what I'm saying? And how many guys died, and how many soldiers died, how many service people died. And, you know, anyway, like I said, I don't want to ramble about it. So it's certainly a gigantic event, and it's something that I was involved in, and I continue to be involved in. In a much smaller way, we lost 5 guys in a little town that I live in, and I'm probably more involved in that than the FDNY, observance of it.
Well, John,
the 18th Battalion, the guys did something, you know, almost every year at the Fireman's Monument, which was always very nice, and I never missed it while I was working. And since I retired, I think I made about every other one for one reason or another. But like I said, it's everybody treats it differently. Everybody, it means different things to different people, and that's fine with me. And some people who weren't there and didn't know anybody and whatever can't stop talking about it. And some people who were there and lost their best friend rarely talk about it. So, like I said, there's a gigantic, you know.
And you're right. And, you know, you made a point about, you know, hats and things. And, you know, there are several legitimate great causes, and we're going to talk about one here very shortly. But, you know, I saw Ray McCormick, our good friend Ray, and a couple other people kind of throw a little comment on a Facebook post with some of the people that are posting, you know, clothing, and it's like a Michael Jordan shirt or a Nike thing. I mean, it's like, you know,
That time of year, September's coming. It's the 20th year. Let's hawk them 9/11 pins, them 9/11.
Yeah.
Now there's badges. There's 9/11 badges. There's 9/11 pins. There's 9/11. And a couple of guys did say online, hey, ask where the money's going. ask where the profits are going from this these sales. Well, you know,
and you and I, we neither one of us have any issues with anyone that's ever done a fundraiser that I always say is legit. You know what I mean by legit, where, you know, right. Get a firefighter, you know, who was killed in line of duty and left behind, you know, 3 or 4 kids, and they're trying to help the family, or there was someone who got a firefighter with cancer, or, you know, there were several firefighters taken from a set of fire or whatever. I've never, in fact, you and I, we usually contribute every time we can.
Right.
So let's talk. First of all, let's go back in time here. 10 years ago, you guys did a 10-year coin, a 10-year anniversary coin. Talk about real quick the memorial, because now we're at the 20-year and there's going to be a 20-year coin. And I know I bought a bunch, and I know I helped you sell some a bunch, because a great cause, a great memorial, 100% right. Of the money goes towards it. So the 10-year thing, you built a memorial where?
Let me tell the whole thing. So we got okay. So it's Washingtonville, New York, Orange County, where I live. I commuted from here my whole career. And so we lost 5 guys, as I just mentioned a few minutes ago, 5 FDNY firefighters, a couple officers, a chief, a couple of firefighters from different companies, all lived right here in this community, all died on 9/11. And the community got together and built a beautiful, beautiful monument right in town, beautiful grounds and granite stone and a flag and bronze helmets. I mean, it couldn't be nicer. And very, very respectful and very solemn. And of course, there's several 9/11 events happen there every year. And now on top of that, that same group, which I'm still a part of, on top of that, you know, obviously we raised a lot of funds to build it. And we dedicated that monument 1 year after 9/11. 1 year later, it was built and in the ground, and we had a big ceremony. And my point is, but the group continued. The memorial committee continued, the fund continued. And what we do is every year we give away 5, representing the 5 guys that were lost. We give away 5 scholarships to Washingtonville high school seniors that are graduating and going to college. And we also recently included that trade schools as well. Right.
Wow.
So, and also in the past couple of years, we've raised it twice. We've raised the amount that we give twice in the past couple of years. So that we tried to keep that fund healthy and tried to keep that fund, you know, flush with money so that we can keep giving 5 scholarships away every single year. And we've been successful at doing that. So that's what we did 10 years ago for the 10-year anniversary. We designed and had a 10-year.
Well, what a great way to keep the memory of those 5 guys alive each and every year. That is what they say. Absolutely. Toledo says, as long as their name is spoken, they won't be forgotten. Yep. That's a great idea, John.
And I'll tell you, and we bring those 10-year coins. I bring the 10-year coins. I try and make every scholarship program, and I bring the 10-year coins, and I call the 5 kids up, and not only do I hand them the envelope with the check in it, but I give them each a coin, and I tell them, this is something special. This is worth more than the check that you have in the envelope. This is something I want you to keep, and I want you to look at and you know, put on your shelf. Obviously, you're not going to run your life around this thing, but once in a while, pick it up and look at it, and just remember that there's people that have donated everything and sacrificed everything so that life can go on for the rest of us, meaning me and you guys going to college and your families at home and stuff like that. So that was our 10-year coin. So now 10 years since then has gone by, and the fund is very healthy, and it's been maintaining its value, and we've been giving the money away every year for the scholarships. But now we're at the 20-year point, and something new has arisen. Post 9/11 illnesses have arrived. You know, they've been arriving, they've been happening. But suddenly they started happening locally. And a good, good dear friend of mine, Ray Phillips, who was retired from Rescue 3, he passed away just 3 years ago of a 9/11 related illness. And so we started thinking about let's put another stone, another small monument in Memorial Park, which is gigantic. It's several acres large. And that's what we decided to do. We put a group together. We got permission from the village, which it's their park. And that's what we did. We designed a, of course, much smaller, but very similar looking stone. And it's going to, and we have a saying that we put on there that the group, you know, hashed out with a bunch of other people. So we have a very nice saying there talking about, these are the people that toiled after 9/11, that toiled at the scene and at the Staten Island landfill. And many of them are suffering either illnesses or are dying from their 9/11 related illnesses. And we're listing the names there of certainly the local guys. We can't do the whole country. There's hundreds and hundreds of FDNY and NYPD guys that are dying. But we picked our 5 guys to honor at our park, we're selecting the local police officers and firefighters and other people that were there. And we already have three names, I think four now, ready to go on that monument. It hasn't even been built yet. It hasn't even been constructed, been made yet. But that's what this 20-year coin is going to do. Every single penny from the 20-year coin is going to go to purchasing and installing the new monument at Memorial Park in Washingtonville. So we're very excited about that.
And John, you know, and we're talking about how many other people from that area have been taken from us due to 9/11. The numbers are just, it's just staggering and scary of how many firefighters and police officers have been taken from us since 9/11 with World Trade Center related cancers. It's in lung problems.
I apologize if I'm wrong, but I believe it's well over 200 for the FDNY. Oh. 200 guys have died since 9/11 of related illnesses. So, I mean, obviously, if you keep looking at that and it keeps growing, the numbers could end up matching, or you could end up with more folks dying after 9/11 than at 9/11. But again, that's neither here nor there. That's trivia pursuit. What we're talking about is getting their names somewhere, getting their names written down, so some grandkid or daughter or son or wife or widow can stop by and say, you know what, my husband, my son, my brother, he died from 9/11 as well. He didn't die that day, but his name is on this monument. So, you know, we keep saying never forget, never forget, never forget. You say it all the time. It's on every bumper sticker. It's on every coin. It's a very valid and true saying. And what better way to never forget than to put these folks' names somewhere where they'll be forever?
Never forgetting means never forgetting. And I mentioned Toledo. They post them all the time. The history that the Toledo Ohio Fire Department. And I love that saying, you know, as long as their names, I said it before, as long as their names are spoken, they will never be forgotten.
Right.
John, right. So if one of our listeners wanted to purchase a coin to support the memorial, 100% again of the funds raised goes towards the memorial, goes towards the scholarship, everything. How did they get a coin? How did they purchase?
All online. And it's www.wbgny911.org. So it's W, William, B as in boy, G as in George, N as in Nancy, Y as in young, 911.org. And when you get on that, that's our committee's website. And it says to order a coin. You click on that and you go through. And if you're going to pick it up, you know, if you live locally, you pay 20. If you want it shipped, you pay 23. The $3 isn't frankly covering the shipping, but it covers a good piece of it. So we're trying to, again, keep the profits up so we can get the monument made. But,
and that's surprising because that's cheaper than most people sell coins for collectors, you know. I'll tell you, I'm pretty proud. We talk about the 10-year one. You know this, when I flew next to Charlie Pride, God rest his soul, we just lost him. I gave him, you know, I buy those from you and I save them for those special occasions. You know that.
Yep.
I gave him one. I gave Colonel Bruce Crandall from We Were Soldiers, the real Colonel Bruce Crandall, Medal of Honor recipient, gave him one. Yep. I gave that World War II FMF Fleet Marine Force Corpsman, remember that one. And this is, you know, I'm a Motown boy. Jamie can get to my wife will talk about this one. Backstage, and we met the Temptations, Otis Williams, the founding member, the last living founding member. I gave him one and brought him to tears. We were backstage and gave one, explained what it was about. And so even the Temptations have one of the 10-year coins. So, all right. Yep. Hey, before we move on to our topic, John, I just wanted to throw another thank you out there to Jeff Bryant and Nick Dingus. Nick is the CEO and Jeff is the COO of Dingus Fire, the Dingus Fire Company, dingusfire.com, D-I-N-G-E-S fire.com. John, I was a little hesitant. You know, I'm always hesitant about buying different stuff that I'm not. I bought a Bullard helmet from them with the built-in LED flag, the built-in low pro. Oh my God. Everything I've got from Dingus, my boots for, you know, we've been doing the structure fires lately, the boots, the gloves, the hoods, everything. They sell everything, but I mean, I don't know. I just, they back up everything they do. You and I both love Jeff and Jeff's the chief in Amboy, Illinois, the volunteer chief. Nick's the assistant chief and sublet right next door to each other. They're us, they're firefighters, they get it. So folks, you get a chance, zip over to dingusfire.com and take a look. They got the metal front pieces and all kinds of stuff. And again, we said it before, John, we don't get paid to say any of this. We say this because we love them and their family. We love them very much.
They're great guys, yep.
So, all right, I asked you about this topic. You know, like I said at the beginning, where there are no rules for the old school podcast, you and I never have a script. We never have like 10 pages of notes in front of us. I usually call you, you call me, you go, what do you want to do? I go, I don't know. You go, hey, let's do this. And I push the record button. But John, we've been doing these for several years now. And we've done them on leadership. We've done them on the volunteer fire departments, on career jobs, on rigs, apparatus, COVID, training, everything. We've done them on everything. Just structural fire-wise, you know, we've done everything tactics and strategy-wise. We've done, you know, as the first line, the second we did as the first line goes, so does the fire. And second line and ventilation and search, and we did ventilators. I mean, we're putting all the pieces and parts together. And in the Bronx, you know, there were so many times talking about the fires you've been to, me in Louisville, and now, you know, with Wichita West out here with Chief Fetzer, and then we've been busy, right, with several structure fires. And then lo and behold, one of my volley partners, Joe Dillon, who's with the Air Force here. I mentioned Joe before. He's a training officer with the Air Force. He's a staff sergeant. He's a volunteer from Rockland County. He and his whole family. He sends me a message. Is that Chief Salka's department that's got the job? I think they just made a grab. And then Billy Goldfeder sends me a text, you know, and then he sends me the audio of you and all this. So lo and behold, South Blooming Grove, you know, you guys responded to structure fire. And, I threw around the idea of calling this the routine house fire. Because we've talked about, you know, routine should be a curse word. But so first of all, what did you guys have? What time of day and what kind of house?
So let me first say, you know, what you just said, lo and behold is the perfect phrase to say, because we just don't. And I, you know, there's no hating to say it. We just don't do fires here. We go to mutual aid. You know, we go next door to Washville. We go to Monroe. We go to Southbury Mills, Mount Lodge. You know, people call us the fires, and we go and we help and we work. We don't get too many first due jobs here. We're not really a small district, but a sparsely populated district, mostly private homes, a couple little strips of stores, and that's it. And I mean, you could be here for a couple of years and not go first due to a fire. All right. So, but we got one. We got one Saturday, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Bing, bang, boom. Tones are going off. And more than usual, the tones are going off. I think I was out in my car before the dispatcher started talking. And it turns out it's a house fire, report a basement fire, a bedroom in the basement, and reports of people possibly still trapped in the building. So, of course, we got there relatively quickly. And because of a couple of conditions that were already in place, for example, like a lot of other small departments around the country, we have automatic response with two of our neighbors because both they and us, but I'm talking mostly about us. We don't have a great number of people turning out.
And stop right there. How many times have we said this? I think I've wore you out with it, about being prepared before the call comes in with automatic aid. We can get mutual aid coming. How many times, John, have we talked about having it in your cards, in your response, in your CAD, anywhere? So yep. They drop the tones. And not just you're not just waiting to get there to see what you've got. I mean, right. How important has that been?
And the benefits of automatic, you know, automatic aid are gigantic. And you know, Butch Cobb will tell you, he works for ISO. When you have automatic aid set up, those firehouses, those companies count as yours. It's like you have additional firehouses in your district. You know what I'm saying? Like if ISO was important to you, you know what I'm saying? Secondly, aside from ISO is, so there I am driving down the driveway and my company's turning out. My people are responding. But at the very same moment, the my two adjoining fire companies, one of them sending an engine, one of them sending a truck on the box, meaning on the first alarm, on the first tone. And that materially assisted us at the scene because now their truck was rolling up right behind our engine and truck. And their engine was rolling up and their chief was rolling up. Suddenly I had three or four chiefs at the scene rather than just the one or two that might have normally been there. So that factor alone is a gigantic thing. Automatic aid. If you're out there, volunteer, career, part paid, on call, automatic aid is a wonderful thing to have. If you have some type of negative history or something to get over with your neighbors, get over it, because the service to your civilians, the service to your citizens should be primary. That should be your primary thought of providing the best service, getting there the fastest with the most rigs, with the most people to try and, you know, capture or arrest every bad going situation. But anyway, so the automatic aid really helped us out. And of course I got there relatively quickly and there it was a, a standalone private dwelling, you know, split level door right in the middle of the house. And when, you know, when you step in, you can either go down or you can go up. Right. And the fire was visibly downstairs, flames out the downstairs window, flames spreading up the siding in the front of the house in a big gigantic V, and flames actually from end to end horizontally on the house under the eave all the way at the top, because the fire got up there. And it, of course, the eave just captures it, right, and holds it. And the fire spreads horizontally, and it jumped into the attic as well. So not only did we have a basement fire, but we had an attic fire.
So fire originated downstairs, ran upstairs, and then ran laterally when it got up into the attic. And
did all of that outside.
Okay.
And it vented the fire room window, and the rest of the spread happened outside the building, which was quite interesting as well. So as I said, I got there after there was another chief there ahead of me, and then I arrived. We waited another minute or two. Firehouse was... again, coincidentally, we had a little critique last night to talk about it. Coincidentally, we had four guys sitting in a firehouse at that time doing something. They were doing something, working on a project. And we had a driver, and we had a firefighter, and we had a young, brand new firefighter, and we had an officer. And boom, they jumped right on the rig and went right up the hill. It was a very, very fast turnout and an arrival, which was good.
Well,
obviously the engine, you know.
And how important is it to have the motivation, to have the proper attitude? Because we've had guys call us and not complain, kind of air things out where they're, you know, the morale sucks and guys don't want to hang at the firehouse. You know, here you got guys hanging, working on projects, doing stuff. I mean, I love sitting up at ours. I sat till 1 a.m. talking with one of our captains. I mentioned him to you before, Chris Bashford. Chris is one of Jamie's deputies here, and he's a captain. And we were talking shop, talking fire stuff till 1 a.m. You know, you've got guys that want to hang out there. They love being at the firehouse instead of the opposite, where you have the morale killers and nobody's there. And they set off the tones, and it even affects that, doesn't it? The crappy morale affects who actually responds when the pagers go off. And you got guys hanging in the firehouse.
For sure. For sure. So they responded quickly, got up there. We, you know, obviously we put a line into operation right away, pre-connected line right to the front door, geared everybody up. Again, I said one guy had about, gosh, maybe 20 years. And the other firefighter was his first fire, you know? So that was quite the couple right there. They had to knock down the fire outside a little bit, not into the windows, but the siding and all was radiant heat right there. We were trying to get in the front door, and they pushed in, you know, did a great job. Second engine rolled up, other lines were stretched. And I mentioned this last night in the critique, how many cross lays do we have? How many attack hose lines do you have? And we have two, cross lays. And I've always thought you should have more than two. I've always thought every engine should have at least three ready to stretch hose lines. And our third line came off the second engine because we don't. We only have two on our first engine.
Well, and think about that. How many times have we talked about, okay, so we stretch the first line, and if we're going to bring a second line or backup line, what happens if you have an exposure problem? When you limit yourself to one, maybe two lines,
right?
Even
two lines. This is just a house fire and a basement. One line goes down to the basement. The next line goes up the stairs to the first floor, to the floor above the fire. Now your two lines are gone. If there's any outside burning or to put the line up into the attic or to protect an exposure or whatever, if there wasn't another rig there, you really wouldn't be able to do it. You'd have to pull something maybe off the back step and connect it to a discharge or whatever. So again, another great topic. How many lines you have on your, how many pre-connects you have on your engine, right? And I made that point last night to a lot of people saying, I've always said we should have at least three connects on the engine. And how many guys have said, how many times you stretch three lines? Well, I can name one right now, you know, and it was this past Saturday. So, like I said, the lines, of course, just like most other fires, it starts slow and then quickly builds as more people arrive and more staffing arrives and more engines arrive and things happen pretty quickly. We did, as I mentioned earlier, have that report of a person still trapped. At one point, two people were reported. Somebody jumped out the rear. Somebody else was still missing. And one of the mutual aid companies came in and said, you know, what can we do for you? I said, we need a search team in there.
Who do you have auto aid, John? Who's coming in automatic aid and how far?
Well, the automatic aid was Salisbury Mills with an engine and a chief. And the automatic aid was Monroe with a truck, you know, and a chief. But then when the second line was transmitted, which was the chief ahead of me transmitted that, then some additional stuff came on top of that. So this ended up being a Washingtonville unit, which is, again, one of our immediate neighbors. They rolled in with their chief and a crew, and I put them on a search. I said, you guys good for search? you know, because sometimes a crew shows up with a tanker and maybe they're not ready to search. Maybe it's like the tanker crew, you know what I'm saying?
Right,
so,
right.
No, we're ready to go, Chief. I said, good.
The tanker crew.
Hey, listen, everybody does something different. I know guys that ride in a tanker every fire. I know guys that really put gear on and their interior structural, but they don't go in a lot.
That's right. That's right.
You know? So you got to ask them before you send them in for a search at a working house fire. You guys ready to do a search inside here? Yeah, we're good. We're good, Chief. So Brian Bates, the chief, took them up and took them in. And oh gosh, I don't know how many minutes it was. I wouldn't venture to say two or three, but it was just a couple of minutes later. Bing, bang, boom. We get a victim, remove them out to the rear yard. And it was a great, you know, we call it a grab. It was a great locate and removal of a victim.
Well, and it was a grab. How many people, they talk about a grab and it's this fact they walk granny down the stairs and out the door.
Yeah, that's a you removal. Know, right.
This was an unconscious female, right?
Absolutely. They went in. Unconscious, you guys, young adult. Yeah.
You guys are pushing through the front with a line. You got fire downstairs, fire running upstairs, fire, you know, good fire. You're trying to get a second line going, you know, all this. You got a crew pushing through the back, and lo and behold, like we said, you know, the routine house fire. I guess some people call routine house fire. I don't know too many routine house fires where they make grabs. I think we kind of cross over that threshold.
I'll tell you what, you can go to a lot of house fires. You could go to hundreds of house fires. You could listen to hundreds of house fires and never hear the word victim or never hear the word rescue.
And John, how many guys and gals you know that have been in the fire service 20, 30 years or better? This is no disrespect. This is a fact. Have never drugged somebody out of a building unconscious. How many police officers have never fired a bullet out of their gun? You know, and it doesn't mean they're bad cops. It doesn't mean they're bad firefighters. It just means that either you weren't there or you just don't get, you know, it just doesn't happen.
But so the other thing I got to remind you of is 3,000 people die every year in fires in America, and almost all of them die in house fires. I am aghast at that number. And I think it's a terrible, whatever you want to call it. It's a terrible total for the fire service to live with. And we have to live with that. That's part of our responsibility. You know, if there were a million bank robberies going on every year that were not solved, somebody would be asking the cops why. And the fact that 3,000 civilians are dying in fires every year, and we get all humbly bumbly if two more firefighters died this year than last year. And it's down to like in the 50s now, right? And 3,000 civilians are dying and hardly anybody's talking about it. So searches are important. And I made that point. And we didn't only have a search going in the back. We had another team go in the front and go up to the same level, but from the front. So we actually had searches going in from the front and the rear. The rear guys found a victim because the victim was only about 10 feet from the back door.
And talk about that. You know, Eddie Enright taught me, I do a class on it, about tactics strategy. And you heard me say this phrase before. Eddie was a big one. And if you want to be successful, Rick, remember two words, cover and contain. Cover the building with as much in the way of firefighters, as much, you know, water and equipment, and contain the fire to the room of origin, floor of origin, building of origin. And just what you said, all right, I've got a line going to the front. I got a search crew going to the back. I got a search crew going to the front. You know, you possibly or pretty much have someone in there. Instead of hoping that the one search crew goes in and bumbles around and finds them, you're it's like, bam, you're hitting them from the back with a search crew. You're hitting them from the front with a search crew. You got a line going in. You're following with a second line. You got one going downstairs, one going upstairs. You know, you got extra chiefs there. You had automatic aid coming in. You got mutual. Boom, second line right away.
All in all, the placement of the crews turned out excellent. The fact that we had a line on the fire floor and a floor above. We had two search teams on the floor above. You know, obviously many more people ended up going in the building, pulling ceilings and you know, opening up for the fire and for the streams. We ended up having a third line stretch as well, back to that old point that we just were talking about. And another important point is these search teams were not on hose lines. And that's just not something, it's just not something we do routinely. And I'm not saying that's not a good thing to do. And I'm not saying that's not a valid tactic. I'm saying I don't like it. I'm saying I think it's much more efficient and quickly and productive to do a search without a hose line, especially in private dwellings. I'm just talking house fires.
Right.
I'm not talking in a row of stores or a factory or a commercial building. I'm talking about in a house. Should be able to get a two or a three person team into a house from any normal entrance, from any front door, back door, side door. And you should be able to get in there and start conducting a search without a hose line. And it'll go much quicker. You have a much greater chance of locating a victim.
There's no way you're going to cover an entire first floor. You know, never say always, but you know, we've both been doing this for a while. If you're going to drag a hose, say there's three of you and you're going to drag a hose line in there, how efficient, how proficient is your search when you're trying to drag a line and fight to, instead of just going, John, you and Rick, get in there. Give me a, hey, I need a primary search down and dirty right now. Second floor, get up there. Boom, off we go. The first floor crew knows we're going up there. So they got our backs. You know what I'm saying? And, right. So how important is it? You know, I wrote down already just a little note here as you were talking about, you know, it's the word I write down. I should have it carved in my desk here, training. You know, we talked before we even started this about the importance of having the plan ahead of time, the automatic aid, mutual aid, so you could just push the button and off they come. But John, the training, being able, training your people on how to search away from the line or without a line is huge, isn't it?
Absolutely. And we had that discussion last night at the critique, again, because it also depends on what you're doing. Sometimes you send a search team in, and there are departments that when the search team goes in, they drag a hose line with them for them. They're not going somewhere with that hose line. They're not assigned as the floor above hose line team. They're going in as a search only team, but they drag a hose line because that's what their department views as important or necessary, that they have a hose line with them because they're in a burning building and it's going to protect them. That's one thing. Still not that efficient or productive. But sometimes people, and this is the exception now, you send a crew into a house fire that you don't have a lot of people responding to, and they go to the floor above to check for extension. This, they should be able to search too off that line. They're not going up there to search. They're going up there to bring the line to the floor above and examine and make sure the fire's not extending. But they shouldn't be just crawling down the hallway on the line and passing bedroom doors. Somebody should be jumping into the rooms and making a quick search, coming back. Okay, Billy, let's go and move a little bit farther down the hall.
Working off the line, right? I mean, how many times have you been in there and you've seen guys, all right, they hit it and then they're just kind of like, you know, welded to the floor. And I'm like, there's two of you on this line. Hey, Rick, hang, stay right here. I'm going right here in this room. You hear me? I'm right here.
Right.
All right, boom. Hey, we're good. Room's clear. We're not violating rules. I can still
talk to you. Now, if you're going up there with that line, if you're going up at that line to get to the end of the hallway to knock the fire down in the room above the fire room, and now you got two rooms burning, you know you have a room burning at the end of the hallway. If you're going up with a hose line to get to that room, by all means, you're going directly to that room. You're not making searches in the rooms on the way there.
Right, right.
If you're just going up to check for extension, to do a search up on the floor above, check for extension, then you can break off. So it's, there's 100 variables here. It's not written in stone.
I just watched our buddies in Stockton, California. I keep going back to it. Me and like I said, my captain, Chris Bashford, we're talking the other night. We're hanging in a volley place and I brought up Stockton, California, John. You and I love those guys. The videos, I mean, it was like a minute, 20 seconds off the rig, in the building, fighting fire. But
unbelievable.
Oh, God, Stockton is phenomenal, those guys.
And then watch these videos on YouTube or wherever else. With guys at a minute and 20 into the scene. They're timing it. You watch the rig pull up and stop, a minute and 20 minutes. They're not even fully dressed yet. They haven't pulled the nozzle off the rig yet. And there's other places they got water flowing. If you can't get water flowing in a minute and 20 seconds, you should be baking bread or making candles or doing something, but you shouldn't be riding on a damn fire engine. I'll tell you that.
Well, and again, I know we've mentioned it before, but what I was talking about, John, is they're in there and you with the helmet cam and, you know, a lot of fire. They beat it back in, beat it down, put it up. And now when they got them, he hits it, knocks it, hits it, knocks it. His officer is off to the right sweeping, you know, he's off to the left sweeping with his hook, you know, searching for people like we've talked about. We've got into the people who are in greatest danger are those closest to the fire. And then we work away from there. It wasn't a one-sided approach to the fire where they drag a line and they sit in the hallway. You think the search team's in here yet? You know, command, is the search team coming in? They're fighting the fire and they're searching as they're doing it. And it was such a cool video. And to our listeners, go follow them. Follow them on Facebook. Follow them on Twitter. Stockton Firefighters, the local. Oh, my God. And I know there's a lot of other great places that fight fires out there, but Chris and I were talking about the other night. I'm going, golly, it's so exciting to watch somebody, John. That doesn't happen on accident. That means they train. They don't just wait for a fire. Oh, we get the OJT. They train. They stretch hose. They throw ladders. They cut holes in roofs. And you know, when you watch them, you don't see, oh my God, these guys are crazy. I can't believe they haven't hurt somebody, killed. You don't see that. What you see is a system. You said it before, a finely oiled machine. I think you referred to it, that they hit the ground. not running, but you know what I'm saying? They hit the ground. Absolutely. Everything's quick. Boom, boom, boom.
Right. One guy goes that way. All of a sudden he comes off with the hydrant bag. All of a sudden he pulls a nozzle off the cross light. And like they know what they're doing. And sometimes you see guys getting off and they're banging into each other. They can't figure out who's going to get the nozzle. Two guys have the standpipe kit. Nobody's got the nozzle. And, you know, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but it's true.
Well, and I don't think you are. We've watched the videos where they pull up and there's a guy. And I'm like, how long should it take you? You know, let's talk Sal Blooming Grove. You guys are into it. You got some great volunteers in your department when you're chief. You know, you brag on them to me and you brag on them, but I know you don't throw accolades around there like, you know, pennies and nickels. They earn it and your guys have earned it. They do a great job for you guys, you know, for you chiefs. But the shit doesn't happen on accident. It happens because they train. It happens because they got the attitude. They get there quick. They're dressed. You know, we've watched the videos where the guys have gotten up. I'm like, so when you pull up, what's the first thing? Put it in park. All right. What's the next thing? Throw to PTO. What's the next thing? Put it in gear. All right. Jump off. Now, if you're safety, all right, chalk the wheel. Then what? Well, maybe if it's wintertime, I'm going to prime the pump. If not, I'm tank the pump. I'm waiting for Captain Sulka to go send water, charge the line, get whatever. That should take you 5 minutes, 10 minutes. We see some things, John, you and I, 6-7 minutes. I'm like, what are they doing? You know, and I think it all
goes. Let me tell you something. I seen fires knocked down in 6 or 7 minutes.
Oh,
knocked
yeah. down.
From the time the rig stopped till the time the engine officer said, you know, 4-8 to 1-8, main body of fire is knocked down. 8 minutes after arrival, 7 minutes after arrival. I've seen it. I've been there. I've said it.
Well, and again, if you want to emulate people, all right, if you want good training tapes, I'll say it again. Watch the Stockton guys and go, okay, look around your training room and go, or your firehouse, your company, your kitchen table, go, we want to be like that, right? Right. You know, I want to hit a home run like David Judge, or you know, I want to hit like he does. I want to play hockey like Wayne Gretzky. Well, that doesn't happen on accident. I want to fight fires like them. So guys, what does it take? Well, let's get out and start stretching hose over and over and over and over and over and over again. And let's get the saw started over and over and over again. Let's throw ladders. And like you said, how about we just practice putting our turnout gear on over and over and over? And speed is going to come with efficiency, which is going to come with muscle memory that comes from training. And you, the fire you guys had, the agreements you have around with the chiefs in your area, you know, nobody cares who gets there first or second, which department. You know, it's like, hey, brother, hey, sister, what are you doing, man? Who's got, you know what? South Blooming Grove pulled up first, man. They pulled up. They got one. Like you said, you have automatic aid and a mutual aid department got there. Who cares who got in the back and grabbed her?
Funny you should say that, because last night at the critique, I had those folks there. I had the chiefs from the neighboring departments, you know, and my whole company, of course. And right about when it was over, I was on the last slide, questions, comments, blah, blah, blah. All of a sudden, beep, 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 beep. The tones went off, then another one off, then another one off. The same four companies all got toned out to go up the hill because their engine was still automatic aid. Their truck was still automatic aid. It was our box, and we all drove up the hill. I was the last chief to get there because the way the cars were all parked and everything else, and it really didn't matter, you know, but it wasn't anything. So
we're talking a two-story, a split level. You got good fire upon arrival, report of a victim in the building.
Actually, I got to correct you. I thought it was a two-story as well. You go to a split level, you go in the door, you got steps down and steps up, right? And what's above the steps up? You go up the steps to that level, you pull a ceiling, you're looking up in the attic, right? Wrong. This building had been modified a few years ago. They raised the angle of the peaked roof and put another whole level.
Oh,
so
wow.
Everywhere on the main floor, if you pull the ceiling, you hit plywood. There was plywood above on the top of the joist. There was sheetrock on the bottom of the joist and plywood on the top of the joist because a whole occupied floor up there, they snuck a little half-assed secret stairway in one of the little tiny rooms up to the third floor.
Oh, wow.
So we didn't only have two floors. We had a floor above that we didn't even know really was there till they started trying to pull the ceiling and got plywood and somebody found the stairway.
And back to the title of this podcast, the routine house fire, and then, because right. There's nothing routine about hidden rooms and the victim. So a lot of fire, good crew going through the front door, search crew going through the back, search crew going through the front, splitting it, you know, the whole Eddie Enright cover and contain thing, second line, automatic aid, mutual aid, all set up ahead of time, good tactics and strategy, you know, good teamwork among all the departments. Obviously, there's a lot of training. if you could give one of our listeners Chief John Salka's takeaways from this incident, what would it be if you were going to sum it up?
Well, you know what? Basics. Just like our friend from Boston said, right? I don't know why we left the basics, right? Basics. Everything you just said was basics. I mean, we threw portable ladders and stuff too, but portable ladders, pre-connect hose lines, primary searches, ventilation, victim removal. I mean, all of those things are in the book called basics, right? There's no advanced stuff there. There's no special operations there. It's all basic stuff. Well, that's all you got to really have.
And back to what you just said, on top of that, you start off by saying, we go to a lot of mutual aid, automatic aid fires. We rarely get, we're first in on our own job. You know, think about how you said that. You know where I'm going with this. You know, we don't get that many where we're first in our district, our town, our coverage. And here you go. You're first in and you got a people. So the whole, it never happens here. Like we've heard people say, we never get that, is thrown out the freaking window, gone because.
And I also know for sure when we get our next engine, there's going to be 3 pre-connects on it.
Hey, when we did our podcast on specking the rigs, spec it for what you need. Stop trying to build a rig like Chicago or FDNY. What does South Blooming Grove need to have the best first engine going out the door?
Absolutely.
For all that Absolutely. Stuff. So outstanding, buddy. Well, congratulations on a great boys, job.
Good. I couldn't have been happier. I was a very close observer. I watched the whole thing unfold.
Well, great job, buddy. I would expect nothing else from South Blooming Grove. As we close things out, if they want to get a 20-year 9/11 anniversary coin to support the memorial in Washingtonville, the addition to the memorial, what's the website again, John?
The website is www.wbgny911.org. And it'll say 20-year coin right on there. Order a coin, you click on it, and $20. $20. Best deal in town. We charge $20 for the 10-year coin too. 10-year all price.
Yeah, I think it's an awesome cause. And we'll say it one more time. As long as their names are spoken, they will never be forgotten. So Hey, to our listeners, you get a chance, zip over to dingusfire.com, D-I-N-G-E-S, dingusfire.com, and get a hold of Nick Dingus and Jeff Bryant. I promise you won't be disappointed with the customer service you get from fire chiefs taking care of firefighters and what they do. You can get a hold of me at chieflasky@gmail.com. John, if they want to reach out to you.
ChiefJohnSalka@gmail.com.
All right. Another great show, the routine house fire. And then tying all that other stuff we've talked about and the importance of that. Train.
Let us know what you think. We've been getting a lot of feedback lately from the last couple, which we've really enjoyed, to tell you the truth. So don't hesitate. Don't be afraid to comment. Good, bad, or otherwise. If we left something out, let us know.
Yeah, if it's bad, send it to John. And Well, hey, folks, thank you again for joining us. As you know, we never end any of our shows without asking you to please keep the men and women of our armed forces in your thoughts and prayers. And remember, never forgetting means just that, never forgetting. Be safe. God bless you. And thank you again.